Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Hello, Greenhorns. This is Severin. This is Greenhorns Radio, radio for young farmers, by young farmers, and in this case, it's farmers so far away. Today we have Megan Talley, who's coming to us from Alaska. Welcome, Megan.
Hi, Severin. Thanks.
Thank you. So, of course, there's always news to talk about, but I'm on the Orcas Island in the San Juan Islands, and I've been eating Alaska salmon almost every day, and it's so good. I wonder what's going on with the weather in Alaska. How is it going up there?
The weather, it's sunny, and there's no snow, and it's probably about 40 degrees out right now where I'm at.
So can you just give a little bit of a briefing about the geography of Alaska and where the farming is happening and where you guys are and the whole situation there?
Sure, yeah. So Alaska's huge, humongous, and we are in South Central Alaska, which means we're not far outside of Anchorage. Compared to Alaska, we are like in the very southern crook of it. But There are a couple of regions of places where people are farming. Where we are is probably where the most farming is happening. And then you have the Delta area, which is probably, I think it's about 6-hour drive from here on the way up to Fairbanks, where you have sort of another pocket of farming happening as well. And then you also have Southeast Alaska, which is a totally different climate than where we are, where people are doing, I wouldn't say so much farming, but like large-scale front yard and backyard gardening and producing quite a bit of food that way, to my understanding. So I'm surrounded by massive mountains. I'm between two glaciers, and we're sort of in a flat plain that used to be glacial runoff. So all of our soils are glacial silt, which is kind of interesting.
So now when I was there, I learned that the Matanuska Valley is also called the Matsu Valley. Will you talk a little bit about the different the phases of settlement and the homesteads and the land that you're on?
Sure, yeah. So the Matsu Valley, well, the Matanuska Colony was part of the New Deal in 1935, and Roosevelt sent up 200 families, mostly from the upper Midwest region that had been hit during the Dust Bowl and the Depression, sent them up here to literally clear forest land away and start farms. So it was sort of this like interesting socialist experiment. It did pretty well in some senses, and a lot of families, there's actually still some families here that are from that original colony, but a lot of families ended up leaving cleared land. So the property that I'm on is 900 acres. Most of it's still wooded, but we've got about 200 acres in that are hayed, and then we run a 6-acre vegetable plot. And this land was originally sort of pieced together by a woman named Louise Kellogg from the Chicago area, who came up here in the 40s, and she had a hard time finding any land or having anybody sell her land because she was a single woman in the 40s, but somehow talked people into selling her parcels of land. She ran a dairy for a long time, up until the 80s, and just sort of bought up land as people ended up selling out and leaving. So this whole area is really sort of scattered with these interesting little pockets of old farms, and is still probably I'm not sure if this or Delta are the biggest producers. Delta produces more grain and barley. We really down here produce like vegetables and some meats. And there's still definitely a community and culture of homesteading in this area for sure.
So let's talk about what drew you to the area, and then after that we're going to talk about your many landscapes and maybe some analysis. So get ready your analysis brain. But first let's talk about the program that you're running there, and maybe you're even recruiting students at this time.
Yeah, absolutely. So currently, now the land, when Louise Kellogg, who owned this land, passed away in 2001, she deeded her property to Alaska Pacific University, which is how my husband and I got up here. So we rerun the farm, and we're working on developing credited courses through APU, Alaska Pacific University, in farming and food systems. It's a small liberal arts college that sort of happened to get a farm given to them with no farm program. So we're really working on developing some food system programs around here. And currently we offer an internship program in the summertime, and we're working on getting courses in, they have a sustainability undergrad program. So we're working on getting sort of food literacy put into definitely the sustainability program, but also just in general for all undergrad students at that school. So we're looking for summer interns. If anyone wants to come spend a summer between two glaciers in a beautiful place where the sun never goes down, we're looking for that. And in the next couple of years, we'll definitely be offering more and more programs that actually deal with growing food, but also how the food system here works and is put together.
So, there's a little side note we have to go into, which is, what's the impact of this long, long day on the produce that grows in Alaska? And what should people expect about farming for 24 hours a day?
We try not to farm 24 hours a day.
Okay. Thanks.
It's cool. It doesn't ever get super warm where we are. It's different when you get up to Fairbanks. They get pretty hot, but we still harvest our greens at 9 in the morning. It doesn't really get a whole lot hotter throughout the day typically here, so it doesn't affect us too much as far as the length of farming. I will say that occasionally, 11 o'clock at night, I realize I'm still outside working, and it's still nice and light out. But the effect on the produce is interesting. Some things are not affected at all. Some things grow really big, so the brassica family for sure really loves the soil and the light here. We get the biggest broccoli heads I've ever seen in my entire life with little to no amendments, and currently we're still building up our soil structure here, so broccoli can do really well with basically nothing here. But we get a lot of stuff that bolts, so beets bolt in the first year. We have a hard time with cilantro. It wants to bolt. So a lot of the sort of small-scale research that's happening is on figuring out which seeds will not bolt in the light. Chard wants to bolt. And we can't do eggplant here either unless we find a place for it to actually have darkness, because it's a nightshade, so it needs some sense of darkness. So we've had a hard time getting eggplant going even inside where it's warmer.
You have to call up the marijuana growers' supply houses and get the that black padding stuff that they use for light exclusion. When you say really big broccoli, can you make some comparisons of how big, like big as a dinner plate, big as a soup tureen?
We definitely have some broccoli, single broccoli heads that were as big as a dinner plate this year. And like I said, our soils are still need some more organic matter in them. We're still sort of working with just glacial silt and not a lot of soil structure. So, definitely. That, I would not say that's the norm, but we got quite a few that were dinner plate size.
Okay, so now everyone knows a little bit about Alaska and the fact that there's a fun scene up there. Now I'm interested if we can shift gears and talk about how you swung your Tarzan way from Oklahoma to Massachusetts to upstate New York to Alaska, and maybe a little bit about the navigating that you did, thinking especially about the young farmers who were trying to figure out how they're going to start navigating. Maybe describe the journey and some of what the process was like for you, decision-making-wise.
Well, I grew up in Oklahoma, sort of surrounded by agriculture, and never really considered that to be a profession until I saw what small-scale farming in New York looked like. My path was working at the Union Square Farmers Market and just realizing how awesome, like, having fresh local food was and sort of the community that was making up this small-scale agriculture. And, I got lucky. I was working the farmers market, and I was ready to leave New York City, and someone offered me a job with the same farm, but driving the truck back and forth, so it was my way out of the city, but I kept my job. And that's where I really first, like, got my hands in the dirt and started doing it. And for me, just something clicked. It made a lot of sense to be growing food and to have that connection to it, and I knew that I needed to pursue that further. So I woofed first, actually. I left New York and went to Argentina. I actually went down there for a dance project that I'd been working on, but decided I would go woof just to make sure I really wanted to farm. And I came away feeling absolutely sure that I wanted to at least spend a good amount of time in my life learning how to grow my own food. I graduated college right before the 2008 financial crash, and I think there's a big part in that for me that I realized that there was never going to be the same kind of, like, good old company job security that some of our parents had, and so I felt like the best thing to do was to learn how to take care of myself in the most immediate needs, which is food. So that was sort of my initial spark into going into it. And then when I came back to the States after being in South America, I looked on ATRA, ATTRA, and started looking for internships. I'd already been in the Northeast at that point for a few years, and so I kind of wanted to go back there because I had a lot of friends and family. And I found this awesome little farm just outside of Boston, Newton Community Farm. I spent 3 years there, which, if you can spend 3 years on one farm, I think is awesome. I think a lot of people end up having to bounce around quite a bit, but spending three seasons in one place, you really get to learn a whole different set of things each year. So I spent 3 years there, and I guess earlier had met my sweetie, and we, after there, moved to Troy, New York, to start up our own farm on some family land. And we realized how hard it was to actually start and run your own business. And we loved it, but felt like we maybe needed to look in different directions. And that's when the opportunity to go to grad school while farming came up. So we packed up and moved to Alaska.
So a couple of questions come up for me. One is, how did you know for sure that it was right for you? And think again about the young farmers who are trying to figure out how sure they are and how assuredly they can take the next step. Well, that's the first question.
Like, how did I know it was for me? I guess a lot of things. I from a very young age, had struggled with eating disorders. I'd never had a really good relationship with food. I'd gone up and down and was really, really trying to figure that out. Even having moved beyond just a body image state, that I've something for me felt very wrong about the food system. So for me personally, the direct connection to growing food and what it meant to grow food and to know people who grew food, it turned some switch in my head that that issue for me sort of disappeared. So that was one pretty major thing. I think in the farming community, I found all of these, like, amazing, strong women who were big, strong people, and everybody, they just were these amazing people who had no issues with food or their bodies. And I thought, for me, that culture was pretty important. And along with the supportive community of young farmers, like, I like dance parties and I like potlucks, and I sort of was thrown into that whole world. And so that was one thing that made a lot of sense. I think I'd also been sort of searching. I'd been to a lot of protests about one thing or another, and I'd been searching for sort of how I could directly affect things that I felt like were out of my control. And I'd done my research into the food system, and I knew it was really messed up. I grew up around contained animal farms where, you know, I knew something was wrong with the food system, and so I wanted to find something that I was directly contributing to making better. And, you know, farming is so direct. You're actually, your hands are on it. You're doing it. I like physical work. I liked that part of it. And, yeah, so that just made sense for me.
And let's talk a little bit about the starting a farm from scratch. Because you were coming in with, at that point, you had 3 or 4 years of farm experience and your partner had similar. What are some lessons that you would transmit to others and for yourself, thinking kind of longer term ahead, like what will you do differently next time?
Starting a farm from scratch is tough. I think it's different in every situation. We decided from the beginning not to take out any loans in our first year, so we had some money saved up, and we were able to live in a house. We weren't paying rent to live, so that was helpful. So I would say, you know, find the best situation for sort of low-cost living. Again, I was sort of lucky not to have any college debt or anything, so that was helpful. But, we found that, you know, reaching out into our community, too, is really important, starting our own farm, because, you know, one person knows how to do something that maybe you don't, and typically people are pretty willing to help you with things that you might have questions. So I would say don't hesitate to reach out and ask questions to people who have more experience. And I don't know, yeah, I think, you know, the investment part of starting a farm from scratch is so difficult. We'd been farming, and so didn't have that much money saved, but we were able to buy sort of our first few pieces of equipment and not have to go into debt for that. So, I don't know, I was talking to another farmer up here earlier this week, and she's in her, I think, 8th year of running a farm, and she's really just now to the point of feeling like, okay, I got this. So I think that when you look at, like, I'm going to start a farm, like, do the 10-year plan, do the 15-year plan, and, like, figure out what you're going to buy and how you're going to sell produce in that first year, and then what it's going to look like the next year, and knowing that it's going to change, but it's a lifetime investment. It's a long-term planning that I think a lot of us are not necessarily ready for. But then to the brand new farmers too, just I would say spend a lot of time on different farms. Join a CRAFT, CRAFT, Collaborative Regional Alliance for Farmer Training. I spent some time in the Eastern Massachusetts CRAFT and Hudson Valley CRAFT, and that was huge. I think you get to see other people's farm systems. You get to know the community. That was a big part for me in my learning experience. Does that answer?
Like, don't hurry thinking you have to go off and rush into entrepreneurial phase, even if it's
No, don't hurry at all. I think I would say too, you know, I'm working for a university right now, and one of the things that we're thinking about is like, how can every university support a farmer, and how can every hospital support a farmer, and how can every middle school support a farmer? So I think I'm hoping that over the next few generations of new farmers that we get into these institutions that want to supply fresh food to their place. So I would love to see more jobs opening up that are farm jobs rather than farmers feeling like they have to go out and start their own. So, you know, spending time to learn different systems with a lot of different people in different regions can be really helpful.
Well, and that there's a lot of nonprofit energy going into starting farm incubators, and that's really valuable and can provide good habitat for new growers. But if that incubator is affiliated or latched in with a guaranteed buyer, like you're saying, a hospital or a school or a brewery or another reliable purchaser of food, that seems like a really solid, like, I almost think about like a shunt or a, you know, in the membrane of cells, how there's like there's a pump, a sodium pump that brings materials into the cell. Almost like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, any way that I think we as new farmers can can have other people share the risk of our farming venture, especially once we know what we're doing and know how to farm, the better we will all be.
So we don't have that much more time left together, but I wonder if you could talk a little bit about family land and the kind of approach to take around family land. Often, so many of the young farmers are not coming into family land. They're coming on to work with a landowner or a retiring farmer, or they're making a lease as a start. That we almost don't have that much kind of community gossip about the way to approach family land. And I thought you would be pretty good at laying out a little bit of the basics, the very basics.
We definitely, we've farmed some family land for a little bit, and there's some really great benefits and really great challenges. I would say especially before making any sort of land investment, that really, really spell things out very clearly as to what the succession looks like, who can do what to it, and be clear with your family ahead of time that you do need to make that 10-year plan. So I think a lot of times what we find for young farmers is people want to say, well, I'll lease it to you year to year, or I'll lease it to you for a couple of years and we'll see how it goes. But I think for farmers that's really difficult, because you do need to make investments. You know, if you don't have irrigation, you've got to figure out how you're going to do that. So I think the from the beginning, sort of saying that this is a long-term investment, that we need to sort of know that we're going to be here, that's ideal. And don't be afraid to learn how to write a contract for that, even within family members, because sometimes a spit in a handshake doesn't necessarily work with your family members, and certainly wouldn't work well with a stranger. So I think having someone that can spell it out very clearly and put it in writing, just so that you can always have something to refer back to, like what the agreement is, and that way you prevent any sort of misunderstanding down the road. And what else did I have a thought? I don't know. I think families are often, I think sometimes maybe one of the best ways to get into farming, because they're often excited to see land that maybe hasn't been used being used. And sometimes in our case, we were potentially talking with family members about helping us invest into the family. And again, sort of if you have a 10-year plan for what your farm is going to look like, family members might be inclined to invest in what you're doing. So that's another positive to that. But
there's a lot of positives, and there's a lot of possibilities, and there's a lot of land that needs to get love. So figuring it out step by step and making sure to dot all the I's and cross all the T's and keep alignment such that the farmland isn't suffering from human miscommunication. I want to make sure to make a small announcement, and that is this. Greenhorns is celebrating the Up Up Farm Film Festival. It's all over here on these beautiful Orcas Islands. San Juan Islands, all over Oregon. It's going to be at the Guild Convergence in Schoen Farm in Santa Rosa. Basically, it's a collection of 17 awesome movies about young farmers that are being distributed as a cooperative by the Greenhorns. And so you and your group of young farmers, or your craft, or your church, or your Rotary Club, or your Grange, or your library of your town can buy the DVD and have screening rights to show it publicly, and then it can be in the library and screened in people's houses. And they're really awesome movies that don't otherwise have very much distribution. Hannah Ranch, American Meat, Brookford Almanac, all the different Ireland movies and Greenhorns, pig business, which is about CAFOs of pigs. Anyway, I like them all. I happen to have chosen them. And I recommend them to you. And they also are a good way to support Greenhorn's continuing work. So that's my pitch to all of you aspiring organizers or experienced organizers. Click, click on the link. Any other announcements you want to make from Alaska, Megan?
Announcements in Alaska. Alaska needs new farmers. There's land. There's people who want to farm out here. So if Alaska is calling you and you're feeling the pull of all of the, like, Wild Alaska TV shows, like, come on up. It's a good time, I think, to start ag in Alaska right now. We're on an upswing. So consider
very
that.
Nice people, very abundant fish. I wrote an article about my journey to Alaska, which is on In These Times, Rural America, and maybe they can hyperlink to it from the clickety-clack of the Heritage Radio. And I send you a huge bear hug, lady.
Bear hug.
Bear hug. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.